That is the single reason I started this company, because I'm an entrepreneurial real estate, you know, person by blood with my parents from the Bay Area at the early ages, by trade at Marcus & Millichap, and by just philosophy with investing. And so,
welcome to the Big Picture Blueprint. I'm your host, Dan Habercoss, along with Mason McDonald, and we're going to discuss all things land, real estate, and business in general with all kinds of exceptional people. Let's get started.
What's up, everybody? My name is Mason McDonald, and I am here today with my co-host, Dan Habercoss, for the Big Picture Blueprint. And today we are going to be interviewing a guest that has a ton of experience in the world of capital gains deferment and deferred sales trusts. And but before I introduce him, Dan, how are you doing today?
Mason, I'm great. I'm about 100 yards from the beach in California. It's a beautiful day, closing lots of deals, so I'm having fun.
Lucky you. We got about a foot and a half of snow that I have over this weekend. So jealous that you are in California enjoying the sunshines, because I'm not. But I will be skiing this weekend, which makes things fun. Today, we have the honor of interviewing Brett Swartz. Brett is considered one of the most well-rounded capital gains tax deferral experts and informative speakers in the U.S. He is the founder of Capital Gains Tax Solutions, is an exclusive deferred sales trustee, host of the Capital Gains Tax Solutions podcast, and an EXP commercial multifamily broker in Sacramento, California, and St. Augustine, Florida, which is the most haunted city in the entire United States.
Interesting.
Brett, oh yeah, how are you doing today?
Doing great, guys. Good to see you guys.
I give you a brief intro, but why don't you tell the audience a little bit more about yourself?
Yeah, so grew up loving real estate with my parents in the Bay Area of California. We call it Taxifornia these days. And when back in the day, it was actually really beneficial, or it was much easier to do business then, but taxes were always a challenge there. And then fast forward, I was able to play some hoops in college on a scholarship. It's one of my passions in life. And then I was able to take an internship at a place called Marcus & Millichap to learn about multifamily investing. Then the 08 crash hit, and I went from making a little bit of money to like nothing overnight. My wife and I moved to a little small condo with my brother with a baby that our firstborn was born there. So I really scraped by for a couple of years. But it's during this transition that we learned that you can't just have a tax. You can't just have a cash flow plan. You got to have a tax flow plan and a debt flow plan. You got to have all three. So you have a mindset beyond the traditional way of exiting, the traditional way of trading, traditional way of investing. And that's when we went from being, let's say, cash flow 1031 experts to tax flow as much as we could experts. Now, it took a while to figure that stuff out because I didn't study to be a CPA or tax attorney, and I'm not one of those, but my business partner is. And so you start to spend like 10,000 hours with somebody doing the same thing over and over and over again, and all of a sudden you get the term expert, right? But I still have a lot to learn. But in this niche focus of a deferred sales trust, this is what we use to unlock freedoms. We call it it's like 10 major freedoms that this thing unlocks. And that's what we're on a mission to do, is to we exist to unlock capital gains so that we can unleash freedom and impact. And that's part of what we do every day at Capital Gains Tax Solutions. So I'm the founder of that, married with five kids. We now live in Florida. We moved out of California about a year ago, and I invest into multifamily lending, development, and syndications. And those are kind of our main focus. We also love mobile home park and industrial properties. And then I try to center around my practice as like a real estate investment advisor. So sort of like a financial advisor, we say like stocks, bonds, mutual funds. We focus on real estate investment advising for our clients to help them make sense of different funds, different models, different syndications, different asset classes within commercial real estate. And then we use the DST as the vehicle to tax flow engineer better returns to better outcomes.
That was a fantastic intro. And I have a lot of questions, a lot of things that we're going to want to unpack there, both selfishly for myself and Dan and our real estate investing strategy, and as well as to add value to the audience. But I'd love to hear the story about you and your business partner. How did you guys get paired up, and how did you structure your business and build your business from when y'all first met?
Yeah, so I was at Marcus & Millichap in Sacramento. It was one of the biggest boom bust cities in the country. And we thought we were the Navy SEALs of investment 1031 real estate. And the market had crashed. Now it's 09. And we're kind of like looking around saying, man, how do we make sense and add value to clients right now? And also what went wrong, right? And so the first thing to Ray Dalio has a quote. It says, pain plus reflection equals progress. So the first thing to understand is, like, what's the pain? Then it's also to reflect on that pain. And we identified the big problem being capital gains tax and the 1031 forcing people to overpay. Not only overpay, but also take on equal or greater debt. So once we established that that was the problem, and everyone knew it. Like, literally, you would call, you'd cold call people being, are you in a 1031 exchange? And if they were, you're like, sweet, I'm a broker. I'm going to close a deal. I'm going to get paid, right? And then likewise, if the seller heard that they had a deal lined up, they're like, I'll list and sell with you because you have a deal lined up. That's literally the, like, probably 90% of the transactions is because someone has a deal and then someone has, you know, control of a deal and someone has the money to buy it. And that became like, it's just like, everyone knew that, but it was people still do this every single day. And this is part we're seeing the people that are hurt from it. So we learned that that was the problem. We reflected on that was the problem. And then that began the opportunity to learn from someone who said, I have a better solution. So at a seminar, and we sat there and they start telling about this better solution. And we're like, that sounds way too good to be true. Our CPAs would have known about it. We would have known about it. We work with the best commercial real estate investors in the country. We do more transactions than anyone in the country. We're on the cutting edge of all this stuff. In other words, but we were like open. We were humble enough to say like, well, maybe we don't. But I sat there with about 30, 40 guys in a conference room learning about this, and only about 1% or 2 of us out of the whole room actually took action. My action was just curiosity, but I kind of almost had nothing to lose. Like, I'm barely married. I'm like barely making it in real estate, and people tell me to go get the real job. I'm like, if this isn't a good interest generator, if this is Netflix, what this guy is saying, and we're doing Blockbuster, this will change everything, right? So I started just cold call people, and I would bring him to, I'd bring people, clients, potential clients to meetings with this tax attorney. And I saw over and over and over again, him overcome the false belief of it's too good to be true. We would have known about it. How is it legal? You know, what are the fees? What are the controls? All the things that you would imagine that people bring up. And after, you know, let's just say 500 hours, I'm a lot more smarter than I was in 0 hours. And then after 1,000 hours, and this would go on for year, and year. And I would just send him referrals. And then you look up and all of a sudden he's like, hey, I would like you to take this to the commercial real estate world and go out there and like actually make a dent in the mostly this 1031 behemoth of 5,000 QI companies just banging the 1031 drum. And so he says, would you become a trustee? And I said, yeah, that sounds great. Let's do that. So I went from being a broker to a trustee for this deferred sales trust. But at the end of the day, I educate people. I'm sort of like the nurse or that's going to check you in for potential surgery with the deferred sales trust. He's a surgeon, but I've had a chance to just learn how to do it, how to actually implement the strategy.
Interesting. So, all right, deferred sales trust. Can you walk us through how this works exactly? How, you know, someone like Mason, and let's use Mason and I as an example, because in our active businesses, we are taxed as ordinary income because we're considered dealers for land because we do so many transactions, but we both buy investment properties. So for people like us, what or how would this be useful? How does it work?
Yeah, so your question. First of all, what is a deferred sales trust? It's not a 1031 exchange. It's not a Delaware statutory trust. People get confused all the time because they wrote T's. People go, oh, I already know about DSTs. No. The Delaware is just a 1031. A 1031 is just a way to trade like-kind property to like-kind real estate property of equal or greater value at 45 to 180. So that's important to understand that a Delaware is just a package 1031. Like it's already closed and you can 1031 until it's basically kind of like a syndication, okay? So that is a Delaware and that's a 1031. Now the deferred sales trust is a separate tax code. Basically, it's under IRC 453 and it's a structured installment sale. A structured installment sale whereby a seller can finance a trust in exchange for a promissory note when it sells its asset to the trust. And so we'll do an example. In fact, out of Colorado, I had a client, he's selling about an $8 million business, okay? And no basis in the business. It's a C Corp, not even 1031 eligible anyways, if he wanted to. And he had about a 35% or so the proceeds, or to 40% were going to be wiped out with capital gains tax depreciation recapture. And so he said, Brett, I got a buyer for $8 million over here. Would the trust come in right in between and buy my business for $8 million? I will finance the business 100%, okay? And the trust will turn around and sell it to that buyer that's lined up for $8 million. Okay, so there's three parties here, basically like two sales. It's like it happens at the close of escrow. It's almost like an assignment of interest and or like a two-party close. So it sells to the first, to the trust at first, and the trust buys it for $8 million and sells it for $8 million. So the trust has no gain. And the buyer takes title to the business the same way he would have. He's gone. and the smoke clears, and what's left is the seller has a promissory note for $8 million, typically at 6, 7, 8, or 9%. Compounding rate of return net of fees is what we typically return. And yet there's an extra 35 to 40% more proceeds, right? So he's really thrilled, right? The second part, so I'm gonna pause there. Is there any questions on that, Dan?
No, that's all pretty straightforward.
Yeah. And that works for real estate and businesses, primary homes, crypto, currency. We've done $13 million before the crypto crash for two clients. We think the bull market run will happen this year. We'll do a lot more this year for crypto. We've done it for primary luxury houses. We've also saved failed 1031 exchange. We have the best 1031 exit plan, which gives you the option for all three of the exits we talked about, Delaware Statutory Trust, 1031, and a deferred sales trust. So that's the first thing to understand. And the next thing is you can invest wherever you want. You can put it into hard money lending. You can put it into land banking, land flipping. You could put it into developing multifamily properties. You could put it into T-bills at 5%. You can go into the stock market if you want to. You can diversify. You can dollar cost average. There's no timing restriction. There's no like kind replacement requirement. There's no debt replacement requirement. And it's very flexible for the entrepreneur or the passive investor. And that's what we're finding. Like right now, people want more than ever. It's more than just financial freedom, right? They want time and energy freedom. They want diversification freedom. They want debt freedom, right? They want the ability to dollar cost average freedom. They want the ability to be entrepreneur. If you can, you can be with the trust. They want 1031 freedom. They hate the 1031s, right? Unless they can find a deal, if they can, great. Then fantastic. You can't find a great deal. But we're seeing this massive shift in wealth, which we can talk about here in a second, that is staggering to think about. And that's the key to understanding what the deferred sales trust, when it unlocks those freedoms for families.
So I want to make sure that everything is clear to our listeners here. So the trust both bought and sold that business, to use the $8 million example. That end buyer did put up cash. So that cash went into the trust. And then that trust is slowly and steadily over time, kind of like an annuity or just a note, really, is paying, you know, that seller who sold his business for $8 million, and then he's getting taxed at a much lower rate as it comes out? Or can you clarify that last part? So how does he access that $8 million? What does that look like?
Question. And it all depends, right? And so this is a great example because they actually sold a second asset for $3 million, a commercial real estate property in Colorado, and they put another $3 million into the trust. And then what they did is they turned around and they moved to Florida, okay? And they established, you know, a little bit more tax-friendly state. Now, the distributions, depending on how they're coming out, will be characterized as either ordinary income tax or principal, which would be capital gains tax. Now, in this scenario, they're actually delaying the payment for a couple years and taking no distributions, and it becomes kind of like an IRA in the sense that it's capital gains tax deferred and income tax deferred until they receive payments from the trust, okay? And the trust typically operates in a very efficient manner as well, because the trust can offset and write off as an expense the accrued interest in any given year. So we'll simplify, right? Let's just say there's $10 million in trust at 8%. That's about $800,000 or so per year interest that's accruing, okay? Well, they may or may not take that $800,000 payment. They can move to Florida, establish residency, wait a year or two, and a year, let's say year three, they start taking $300,000 of payment. And in the meantime, 800 is accrued, right? It's building. Now we need to go make the money, right? And go invest. Some money's not just coming from anywhere, but the interest is accruing on the promissory note. The trust hasn't paid any taxes at this point, unless the investments have way outperformed that. But number two, now they start taking money and they'll pay ordinary income tax. They'll get a 1099 for that 300. The other 500 that's going to be accruing, and the other 800 is just accruing, and it's building up and it's compounding. And that's the beauty of this. It's called tax flow engineering, right? Where you're taking the receiving income in a more favorable way, which could lead to lower brackets if indeed you keep it below certain amounts, right? And if you had like losses on certain years, right? So think of it kind of like a water faucet. At times it can kind of be turned on and turned off, right? By amending the promissory note and working with us as the trustee to do all that. And we can be strategic with it rather than just taking it all in one year. It's taxed in that same year. The money's gone. And now you're left with, you know, 60% of the proceeds.
In the situation that the original seller, they want $5 million from that note that was originated, how does that work? Are they going to end up having to pay the capital gains taxes on it? Or is the promissory note, does it not allow them to take that much back? Or how does that work?
So we can structure the note any which way. I have clients that will close a $5 million deal. They want $1 million to spend on their boat or their primary home or something that's personal. And we can schedule a payment immediately. They pay tax on whatever they receive when they receive it. But most clients we structure where they're typically not dipping into principal. In other words, they're just letting the golden goose, if you will, the $5 million, lay the golden eggs of about 6, 7, 8, or 9% cash flow. And of that, they may take half of that or all of that or maybe a quarter of that slowly over time and let the other amount compounded build up. And so there's not a one-size-fits-all model, Mason. Like it's structured, but it can be typically adjusted. It's like once or twice a year we can make adjustments with that in case something does change. But what our clients really like about it is that as long as it goes into different investments, it stays tax deferred. So in other words, you might have $5 million in there, but if you say, Brett, I only need $100,000 of cash flow from this, in the meantime, let's go invest into my own deal over here or passively with like you guys, or you know, a mix between mobile home parks, multifamily, land development, you know, whatever, it's customized to what their risk tolerance is and their diversification needs are, right? And that's where, as long as it's invested in different things, it's tax deferred. It's only taxed as it comes out personally to your personal bank.
Do you hear about the deals that Dan and I are doing and feel like you lack the capital or knowledge to do them yourself? Allow us to be your partners in this and visit gupland.com. to learn more about how we can provide you with all the capital to complete land transactions, as well as the expertise and guidance for you to create your own business. Visit us at gupland.com. And one thing I want to hit on there is you mentioned that they can invest in their own deals with the money coming from the trust, yep. Where you guys are the trustees, you're managing it, you're essentially a private equity firm that's deploying all this capital on various projects and everything. But I think something that a lot of people get excited about whenever they hear self-directed IRA, of got all this money that I rolled over from my corporate 401k into this self-directed IRA. And then you find out, oh crap, I can't invest in my own deals whenever I'm doing something like that. But that's not a barrier, it sounds like, with the deferred sales trust.
Absolutely. You nailed it, right? In fact, that is the single reason I started this company, because I'm an entrepreneurial real estate, you know, person by blood with my parents from the Bay Area at the early ages. By trade, Marcus and Millichap, and by just philosophy with investing. And so if it wasn't for the ability to be entrepreneurial and be able to what's called joint venture partner with the trust, where the trust puts up all of the money, but like checkbook control, you're forming the LLC. Let's say it's your deal, Mason. You're opening up the bank account. You have the operating agreement. You're the majority. You're the managing member. You have the controls, and you are investing into the land deal or the multifamily, whatever it is that you want to do. Right, that's business purpose and investment purpose, right? That's key. It's not your primary home. It's tax deferred and you're running it, right? And that's the beauty of this. In fact, that's why our entrepreneurial clients love to do this. We did $46 million out of Texas about a year and a half ago. And these two very entrepreneurial clients, right, that are like doing deals all the time, right, with land, with development. That's why they chose it, because they said, look, we're doing these deals anyways. And we're paying all this tax, and why don't we defer it, and we can still partner with the trust. Now, we have to follow the guidelines. As the trustee, I've got to approve of the investments, right? If I didn't have to approve, it would be the whole thing would fall apart. So I do have to approve it, right? But these are deals that, you know, the odds of me not approving it are very, very low. So we look at the deals. The trust comes in as a partner, and it's a legitimate business, our legitimate investment. And you're running it, right? And then what happens? You pay the preferred return back to the trust plus the amount that it put in, but then you get the majority of the upside. So you're not ever capped at that 6, 7, 8, or 9% on the promissory note, which is the second objection a lot of people have is, well, I'm an entrepreneur. Like, I'm going to make way more than that. I don't want my returns capped. Well, you're not capped the way that we structure it. But most people don't see it. Like, they don't look at the onion all the way through. They just look at the first layer, but you got to just keep peeling it back. And so the deferred sales trust to us is not only the most vetted tax referral amazing strategy you've never heard of, your CPA's never heard of, but number two, it's the best wealth building strategy, because it gets time on your side and you're not capped, right? And when you put those things two together, right, like the 1031, you're not capped, but your time is not on your side, right? The deferred sales trust, you're not capped. And we could also eliminate the estate tax and give you a new depreciation schedule the way that we structure it. And that's why it's obviously we're biased, but that's why we love it, right? That's why it's transformational for clients versus just transactional, like a lot a lot of other strategies.
So, Brett, you know, you mentioned $46 million, $8 million. At what level does this start to make sense? You know, if I'm selling a $1 million building with a $400,000 basis, given the cost to set this up, does that make, at what point do you start recommending this for your clients?
Yeah, $1 million net proceeds and $1 million gain, okay? So the gain, to clarify, is your adjusted basis, right? And then you have your sales price minus adjusted basis, and that's the difference is the gain there, the capital gain. So we have a $1 million gain, it's got to be big enough. Number two, at least a $1 million net proceeds into the trust. And so that's our minimums to go. Now, if you had two that could combine to that in a short period of time, we do make that one exception, right? And or we did a deal that's $250,000 for a client in Texas because he has a $10 million portfolio. So he started out with a small one to get really comfortable, you know, with everything. And he still had some tax, like $60,000 or $70,000 tax. We never do that deal on a one-off basis because it's not that economically making a lot of sense. Although for him, he delayed the trust payment too, so it did help. But for him, that was an on-ramp for the other $10 million that's coming up. So there are some exceptions to the rule, but generally speaking, on a one-off transaction.
I love you practicing what you preach right there, because that's one of the frustrations we have with certain big banks, certain institutions and everything of, okay, look, I understand that you have these three boxes you need to check in order for us to work with you, but I can see the larger picture. I can see the long-term business relationship here. So I just appreciate you having the entrepreneurial spirit with your criteria. Although our listeners don't necessarily go to Brett with a bunch of these one-off deals that you might have. So I think one question that I have kind of on the deferred sales trust, with all money that comes into it, though, it has to come in that mechanism, though, right? Of it has to come from a sale where there is a gains that is being deferred, or could I say, Brett, I want to put $1 million with you just to invest?
Yeah, great question. So it does come from a sale, and this is a good time to talk about when to set it up too, right? So we need to set it up prior to the close of escrow and even prior to the buyer removing all contingencies, unless you use the best 1031 exit plan, which we just released. You can go to experttaxsecrets.com, and that gives you the option for the regular 1031 exchange, Delaware Statutory Trust, and the Deferred Sales Trust. So you have an option to have all three, not just, you know, one or the other. So, but if you're not doing a 1031, we need to set it up prior to. Now, we have option language to weave this in to the deal so that you have an opportunity to either use it or not use it, or if your deal may fall apart and, you know, you don't have to pay anything. So we only get paid at the close of escrow. But that's the key. I also want to mention too, because you mentioned a little bit before about you guys being dealers, right? There is some Achilles heels to this, and I'll talk about who is not, you know, who doesn't want to use this, because all of this sounds like rainbows and butterflies at this point. But let's talk about when it doesn't make a lot of sense, right? Either the deal's too small, we kind of touched on that. But also, if you're dealers, then basically that is your business, right? So unless you're selling your business of being a dealer of all the things, and that's like conglomerate of a, you know, $5 or $10 million exit, it's not the individual, you know, active, you know, income that you're earning on those individual deals. And so that is an Achilles heel there, right? If you're considered dealers. Now, we did some deals in Texas where they were doing a one or two off land flipping, right? Where they tied the land up, they improved it, and then they sold it less than a year and it worked for that. Okay. But they weren't dealers. Like, they weren't doing so many that it put them in dealer status. And so again, there's another nuance there, right? But the deal was large enough where that one worked on a one-off basis. And so part of the answer is it all depends, okay, is our favorite answer here. And we're going to look at the situation, give you our honest assessment, and then, you know, give you, you know, what we say could be the, you know, the way that we call it building a capital gains tax exit plan, right? Like, you built your real estate, you built your strategy, right? Now let's build the plan to exit so that, you know, you have an extra 25 to 50. 50% more proceeds that you can go to work.
If you guys are watching on YouTube, you saw it, but if you're listening on Spotify or somewhere else, Brett just showed his book right there. So make sure to take a look in the show notes, and we'll make sure to link that there. But Brett, you gave the perfect attorney answer. It depends, even though I know you're not an attorney. Let's talk about the stakeholders involved in all of this. There's a lot of complexity here. You mentioned that your partner is a CPA. Do you guys have attorneys on your side that are advocating for your clients? How does it work? Who are all the stakeholders involved in all of these complex transactions and investments?
Yeah. So there's a tax attorney and CPA is the creator of the structure. Okay. It's my business partner. And then, so that's really important, right? Because he's on both sides. Because a lot of CPAs are kind of like tax reporters, you know, like, hey, we're going to report what happened, right? Versus tax strategists, which is more like a tax attorney, right? So he's a brilliant mind. He's a genius. I feel like he's like Elon Musk when it comes to this stuff. He's the number one installment of sale attorney in the country in thousands and thousands of transactions. And so the key is having that horsepower, right? And that brain power, lifetime audit defense built in, 25 no change IRS audits, thousands of closes, 27-year track record, all of these things, private letter ruling, third-party tax attorneys consistently find us if they sign the NDA, and then they join us, right? And, or they start sending us referrals, CPAs, financial advisors, law firms, across, it just keeps happening, right? But you don't, you're not aware of it because we're still just a small sliver of the exchange business, if you will, if you're looking at 1031 exchanges. But yes, the answer, I'm a third-party trustee, so that's one part of the role. It's really important. Tax attorney is very important. And then we work with like third party, like Charles Schwab to land the capital in typically. And then we can work with financial advisors as well to manage if they're going into securities. A lot of our clients like the real estate. They feel more comfortable because that's where they exited from. So again, it all depends. Like we might bring in and make sure that we're bringing people to the table that really fit. A lot of our clients have their inner circle, right? And we may bring their inner circle in, right? And so the key is just working as a team. Our goal is to try to form sort of like a mini family offices for each person, where each individual has some of the best to work with them, kind of like a Roman legion with the little shield and spear and lining up next to each other to try to create and preserve more wealth with the client.
So one question is, you know, I've got my portfolio that's managed by Morgan Stanley. Do you work with these private equity firms and family offices and everything like that whenever they're looking to alternative asset classes? Are you someone that works with those people as well or no?
Yeah, I mean, most of our clients right now are individuals or are married couples. We are in the process of, I can't think, breaking into the family office space as one of our goals for 2024. We're working with a gentleman who leads one of the largest clubs in the whole world with this. And like a strategic alliance there to educate and show people what this is. Part of the challenge too is sometimes, you know, you have the old dogs teaching them new tricks, especially in real estate, man. I mean, it's not easy to break in with that. Number two, if they're a family office that, you know, let's say they're in the billions, right? They have their team that have got them there with those strategies. And so sometimes it's also not as easy to switch, you know, switch out the starters, right? Like, you know, if you've had, you know, a guy who's been with you for 5, 10, 20 years. And, you know, sometimes we do break into that. And so I think we will more in the future. But right now, we really haven't broken into like the family offices. But I absolutely think we will. And that'll be a big part of our story moving forward.
Well, speaking of old dogs and new tricks, I see in the notes on your bio here something about an 84 million or trillion wealth transfer and how the DST can really change the future of freedom in the U.S. Can you tell us a little bit more about what you're talking about and expand on that?
Yeah. So 240 years ago, there was an event. It's called the Tea Party, right? Where we as Americans, our ancestors, if you will, they fought to get freedom because of too much taxation and not enough, you know, freedoms and rights. And so 240 years later, American in particular has built up the most amount of wealth in the history of the planet that we know of. And some of the numbers that we've heard are around $84 trillion from the baby boomers that's set to transfer to the, you know, next generations in the next, you know, really 15 to 18 years at this point. Okay. So this is a massive amount of wealth. In fact, 50% of the total net worth in America is tied to high-end primary homes, businesses or private equity, and commercial real estate. Those three asset classes represent 50% of the total net worth, and they're very highly appreciated. I mean, there are lots of appreciation, which means lots of tax liability if they sell, which you would say, well, then, Brett, why don't they just not sell and get a stepped-up basis? Well, there's a number of reasons why people have to sell, but guess what? The stepped-up basis, if it's still around by the time in 15 years with our, you know, increasing close to $33 trillion or so debt right now, if it's still around, great. But number two, the government's biggest mousetrap is this thing called the death tax, right? And it's 40% of anything above, basically $12 million as of 2026, if you're married. If you're single, it's only $6 million. So simple math, let's just say you're worth $112 million, right? Which would be really cool. And you're married, right? And you're like, I got my stepped up basis. I got my multifamily, I got my land, I got my mobile home parks. I'm good to go. No, you're not, because the $112 million will get stepped up for capital gains tax, but that estate tax, that 40%, they're going to take $40 million, okay? $12 million, you know, $112 million minus 12 is 100, like 40% of that 100. That's $40 million debt tax. So if you guys have seen the show Yellowstone, there's Kevin Costner, and Kevin Costner, and there's Beth, and Beth's the daughter, and Beth's like, Dad, you got to sell the ranch. Dad, and he's like, I'm not going to sell the ranch. It's, you know, family generations. He's like, but Dad, if they kill you, they're going to take it anyway. He's like, what are you talking about? Well, it's the debt tax, Dad. They're going to take 40%. They're going to, the government to tax it. So we got to get it outside your taxable estate, which leads into the next part. People go, well, I'll buy that life insurance. Well, A, that's really expensive for you to get $40 million life insurance, you know, benefit. Two, I'll gift it away to my kids. Okay, well, you can try to gift some of it away to the kids. It takes time. Three, I'll give it all away to charity, which you can, which is great, but most people don't want to give 100% to charity. So enter the Deferred Sales Trust Plus, right? This is where we feel like it's a calling. It's more than just I help people defer tax and make wealth. It's the battle for the wealth of America, because in one day, in one transaction, let's say we sell $112 million worth of real estate tomorrow while Kevin's still alive. Let's say Kevin's land in Montana for the $112 million. We sell the land into the DST Plus. And that's what I say every time I'm watching the show with my wife. I'm like, Kevin, the Deferred Sales Trust Plus, you know? So I'm like yelling at him on the screen. Well, he could sell it. We can move it outside of his taxable estate. Okay. Does take a sale. It's a legit sale. It's not just moving, transferring it over. Sale. So you have to sell the land, right, to a third party. You have a buyer lined up and all that. Now, this is outside the taxable estate. Now, the children in this scenario, Bess and, you know, what's the other guy's name? I forget. And they could be the beneficiaries. And in that scenario now, at the death of Kevin in this scenario, all of that $112 million is outside the taxable estate. It's not subject to that 40% debt tax, okay? And so you combine this to the $84 trillion. Just think about that, right? If we just had $5 trillion, we could probably solve the housing crisis in America, right? I don't know exactly what it is. I'm just throwing a number out there. Where we could build enough housing, right? But the capital is locked right now in illiquid assets that people are either not willing to sell or going to be taxed too much if they sell. And or if they don't, it's going to be gobbled up with the estate tax for large estates. So we want to be on the front line of that. Exit now and unleash the capital for more freedom and more impact for you know, housing is just one example. We're very close to our heart is attainable housing for those that, you know, need it, right? And that we can provide it if we have the capital. So hopefully that makes some sense, man.
Yeah, Brett, there's a seller I'm buying a fourplex from, and she owns about 40 of the nicest units in that market. Her and I have been talking for a year and a half. I'm going to send her this podcast and say, Beth, you can sell me all of them. Listen to Brett. I'll put you in touch. So, no, that's really exciting and interesting because that presents a solution for those of us that are going out and trying to buy these assets from, you know, the prior generations, but they don't want to sell because of taxes. So, no, that's excellent.
When Mason and I were starting our land businesses, capital was the biggest hurdle for both of us. Over the years, we found this is the case for nearly everyone in the land business. And that's where Ground Up Partners came from. Ground Up Partners is a capital provider for land deals. We'll bring all the funds necessary to close the deal. You just bring the signed contract. Visit gupland.com to submit your deal and get started today.
Yeah, I mean, don't want a 1031. I mean, if she has, I had a client, we just did 15 units. I sold them in Sacramento. They had 15 problems. They don't need 30 problems. I mean, they have a net worth of, you know, $3 to $5 million. And they're like, we're fine. And we have two daughters that we want to travel with. And they're a little bit older. They had kids a little bit older in life. Like, we want to travel. So like, we don't need to trade 15 units for 30 problems. You know, like, we don't need it. Like, we'll sell it. So the 1031 exchange is blockbuster for so many reasons, right? And as the population continues to age, it becomes less and less attractive as blockbuster has for you know, it's gone now, basically, right? I think there's still one in Oregon. And then Netflix is you know, so that's what we say, like, come learn the new strategy. It's not new in the sense that it's been going on close to 30 years. So it's proven, but it's new to you and your CPA. Give us a chance to go through it with you. If you like it, great. We have tons of client references and referrals for people. We have the whole YouTube channel and the book. You know, it's there. You know, you just have to go out and have a clear vision for what you want, where you're going, and then a clear vision for the team and the strategy
I think that's great right there. And Brett, I want to make a point on ask a few more detailed questions about the deferred sales trust, because you said it's been going on for about 30 years or so now. Has there been any recent legislative changes towards it? We've been watching the news, Dan and I, to see what's happening with the bonus depreciation potentially coming back, which we're excited about. And just like with anything that happens, the government has the ability to give and it has the ability to take things away. So since its inception, how much change has occurred?
Really zero. In the sense that this installment sale, 453, known as the seller carryback, goes back to like the 1930s. So this is, you know, closing on, you know, a 90-100 years of like tax code, right? And so it is a tried and true way to sell. The deferred sales trust, we took the installment sale with the trust, and that's the creative thing we did. That's close to 30 years. Nothing yet. So we've never been on the IRS watch list. We've been through multiple audits, state and federal, most of them in California. Never had a single change on any of those audits. So we're batting 1,000, right? So far it's a perfect legal track record, right? Thousands of closes, private letter ruling. And we've had some recent audits that have been no change, no findings. And so, yeah, it just keeps performing because we execute it in a conservative way. And by the way, it's really good for the government. If you think about this, they're actually the one winning the most. A lot of times people think like, oh, we must be doing something, you know, way out of balance because there's just so many benefits here. No, it's really not. Guess what? They get new property. Like we did an $8.3 million deal in Palo Alto. It was a primary home. Well, guess what? He had bought it, you know, 20 years before. I think he was all in for about five and a half, six, right? Well, that property tax hasn't really bumped. Well, that new buyer is going to get new property tax, which is new taxes to California. Guess what? That listing agent is going to get a commission and pay taxes. Guess what? That title is going to pay taxes. We're going to pay taxes on our fees. The equity that gets unlocked into the trust and then turns around and earns interest is going, first of all, it's going to infuse capital into the markets, right? To create more jobs. The next thing is that capital is going to pay back, easily pay taxes on it. So the government actually wants this to happen because otherwise people just sit on all their money in these big houses that their kids are all gone or in these properties that are, you know, that are massively appreciated and is a very low ROE. It's like having either a gold mine or like an oil, you know, that's just sitting under the surface. And if you could like tap into that, it gets all of that flowing, which creates more tax revenue. So they're the biggest winners here, right? They just can't force us to sell, right? They can't force us to save for retirement. So they create IRAs and 401ks. They can't force someone to trade real estate. So they say, do a 1031. They can tax incentivize us, deferred sales trust. And so it's just another way. There's 10,000 pages in the tax code. The key is who could pick out the pages, put the puzzle pieces together, kind of like in a Rubik's Cube, right? And you're moving it all around and you have all these different things. You're like, I just wish I could get the green all lined up on one edge, right? If I could get the green lined up, it would solve a lot of my problems. And you just keep moving the thing, and then all of a sudden you get the green lined up. Boom, that solves your problems, right? And now you're willing to do the deal. But until you unlock and have a team to move the cube, if you will, the problems in a way that are solved, then deals are just stagnant. Deals won't trade, or people are just frustrated, and the government doesn't want that. They want money to move.
Brett, you're making such a good point, and I want to summarize it simply here, where the tax code and these incentives are the government's way of directing money where they want it to go, where they can't solve problems, where they need the privatized side of the economy to go and solve problems for them, like with affordable housing or many of these examples you just gave. So yeah, that's the whole purpose of tax incentives, and many people don't understand that. So I'm glad you said that. All right, well, we're heading towards the end of the show here. Is there anything that you wanted us to ask that we didn't ask?
I would just say that you want to make sure that you have a taxable mindset. Hopefully you have more taxable mindset after we've been talking now, right? And then it's not just the strategy or the idea, it's the team to execute it, right? So you want to go with the team that has the 10,000 hours, that has been through the fire, you know, with the audits, that has the track record, right? You know, these transactions you cannot miss, right? You make a mistake and the audit hits and it blows up, you owe the tax. And so that'd be the key, you know, just making sure you're finding the team and the group that aligns with your values, your vision, and for your wealth plan, and figure out a way to help you with all of that. And then it takes a team, right? And it's not just, you know, one size fits all, but I think that would be the, just the last comment I would have for anyone who's looking and is interested in exploring any kind of opportunity, just come in with a clear vision and find the team that has can understand that vision.
Brett makes such a fantastic point there, y'all, where you can spend a few hours or a couple days researching or watching YouTube videos, listening to this podcast, reading a book, and understanding it at a high level. And if you understand things at a very high level, what you need to realize is you need to go find the experts to go help you with it. You're good at one or a couple things. You're not going to be great at everything. So, Brett, where can people find more about you or about your company and how they can get in contact with you?
Yes, there's three things. Number one, get the book, Building a Capital Gains Tax Exit Plan. We love the book, and I think you will too. Not just because I have a couple chapters, but I have some of the most amazing people in the book, like Kevin Herington from Shark Tanks in the book, and I think you're going to love the book. Number two, go to capitalgainstaxsolutions.com. That's a cool spot where you can get our ebook, our free ebook. You can also schedule a one-on-one consultation with myself or one of my team members to go through the deferred sales trust with you. If you have $1 million net proceeds, $1 million gain transaction, you qualify there. And then the last place is go to experttaxseekers.com, and that'll give you the ability to get the best 1031 exit plan. And so we have a saying that says this: friends don't let friends overpay for a 1031 exchange. Also, friends don't let friends get in 1031 without a backup plan, right? Don't ever go into a 1031 exchange company that doesn't give you the Netflix exit plan, the deferred sales trust. Yeah. And they're just forcing you into the blockbuster. That's the worst thing you can do. We get calls, you know, periodically where people are saying, I'm with this so-and-so QI company that's, you know, really fancy and really big, but they're holding me hostage in their 1031 jail. And I want to go deferred sales trust, and they won't cooperate. They literally lock it down, and then they pay millions of tax. It's horrible. Don't ever do that, right? We want you to go to experttaxseekers.com, get the best 1031 exit plan. You get the 1031 service, plus the deferred sales trust, plus you get a free course.
This has been an absolute pleasure. Please make sure to go check out these resources that he just shared so you can come up with a fantastic tax flow plan beyond just having a great cash flow plan, which is something that Dan and I can help you out with. But in the meantime, this is Mason McDonald and Dan Habercost with the pleasure of having Brett Swartz here with the Big Picture Blueprint. Signing off. And that's it for today's episode of the Big Picture Blueprint. If you found it helpful, please share it with your friends or anyone you think that it could benefit. Don't forget to subscribe and leave a rating, and we'll see you in the next episode.